Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we take you all the way back to 1977. Jim, what were you doing in 1977?
I was mostly playing Atari and staring at my Farrah Fawcett poster. Wait, we're not recording that, are we? Hey, Patrick, we have a new setting for the show.
This is a different setting, isn't it? Yeah, we're actually in my backyard on my patio. It's kind of a nice fall evening.
We love the outdoors, and we've done the show before on my deck a few times.
Love your setting on the deck. It's fantastic.
This summer out in the suburbs, but you redid this whole backyard. We couldn't do it earlier because it was under renovation, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was under construction this summer. But now it's just about finished. We've planted some water-absorbing plants and still need a little grass work to be done. But for the most part, the bricks here are nice. We got our fire pit.
Very nice.
Some nice chairs. And it's going to be a nice fall back here.
You put in this patio yourself, as I recall, mm-hmm. this brick mm-hmm. here, while the rest of your family was like out of town for like a week or something.
Yeah, that's what I did with my vacation time yes. this summer. Yeah.
And you pulled the husband move that we all can relate to, which is like kind of sort of work on it through the week and yeah. then pack most of it, the whole project in the last day before they get home.
That's
right.
Exactly right. Yeah. Sunday came around and I really had to work my ass off to get this thing finished.
We've all been there.
Oh yeah. A couple nights off, drank some beers.
You are listening to Rock in the Suburbs, and we are here in the on the suburban patio, and I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And what's our topic for this week, whole week?
Well, Jim, this is another one of the sort of series we've done. I guess we've done a couple of them now, right? I kind of like to refer to them personally as the Big Five.
I like that name.
Yeah, and September 16th, which is this week, 1977, Talking Heads' first album was released. So we're going to discuss five albums from the Talking Heads. Their first five studio albums.
40 years ago. Do you know how I remember what year that first album came out?
I don't.
It's right there in the title.
Yeah, that's right.
It's called Talking Heads 77.
It's on that green and orange record.
It's just like that Taylor Swift record, right? That came out in 1989.
Yeah, that's right. Right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Talking Heads 77 is the first one. And then we're doing the first five
studio records.
Studio mm-hmm. albums, which are really like the Big Five for this band, right?
Yeah, they are the Big Five. Although, I mean, I guess somebody could make an argument for the name of this band is Talking Heads, which was a double live album that came out between the fourth and fifth. But I don't think you can discount the fifth record. And for you and I, it's the one we got first. So it's very important.
Yeah, I think, yes, the Big Five in terms of studio albums. Because, like you said, there was the double live album that came out in 82.
Yep.
And then, of course, there was Stop Making Sense, which would have been actually after their fifth studio album, but nevertheless, that to me was probably, like, in my mind, that's actually like their biggest record, but it was a live album and kind of a different thing.
That's one of my big concert regrets in history, and I'll tell that story.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll save that.
I will.
And people will have to listen all week. In fact, you'll tell it in little bits each day.
That's right. I'll tease it. Going.
All right. Okay, so we're starting with Talking Heads 77, the debut album.
Yeah. So
Sire Records.
Sire Records. So just a quick bit of background for people who might not know. And David Byrne, Chris Vance, drummer, Tina Weymouth, bass player for the Talking Heads, all went to the Rhode Island School of Design in the early 70s, around 1973, 74. They all kind of met. There was a band that David Byrne and Chris Vance had called the Artistics. And Tina was one of their fans and occasionally drove them to gigs and ended up later marrying Chris Vance, right? They all, after graduation, moved to New York City in the 1974, 1975, when it was really cheap in the Lower East Side to rent a loft. And they did that and decided to start a band and began practicing. And somehow their first gig may have been the greatest first gig of all time. They opened up for the Ramones at CBGB in June of 1975.
So that was their first.
It was their first show.
Wow.
Ever. Yeah. Like, you can't do much better than that. I'd be interested to hear what you think. That was, you know, we were talking a little bit with your wife, Katie, the other day about Blondie. And
oh, don't bring that up again.
She's not a big fan,
no,
folks.
No,
that's the summary.
No.
But the artistic environment in, you know, in the Bowery and CBGB in 76 and 77 was a very interesting one. It wasn't codified in any way like a punk scene. There was so much different stuff going on that the Talking Heads were readily accepted, right?
Yes. I think it's very easy to say CBGB's was a punk club based on Ramones and Dead Boys and Richard Hell and the Voidoids, yep, and I'm probably forgetting, there's you know, others.
Those are
there,
the
Heartbreakers. You know, there were certainly a lot of what you would now say are like classic first wave punk bands.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, and we've talked on the show before about Television,
yep,
which actually weren't they like one of the first bands to play at CBGB's?
They were legendarily the ones that approached Hilly Kristal and
right,
asked him if they could play like on a Thursday night or something, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, they fit into the punk scene, but they're a very different band, say, from the Ramones. Very different.
Totally.
Band.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Talking Heads, very early on in the CBGB scene, I would put them more in the Television camp. And then you had what you would now think of as kind of like pop punk bands like Blondie,
yeah,
right, that were there. And, maybe, you know, I'm sure there are many others that I'm
well,
not thinking
had,
of right
you
now.
You had Patti Smith, who was
right,
completely different as well, right?
Right?
You know, playing with Lenny Kaye and coming from a poetry background. And so the whole scene was very, you know, very eclectic, very accepting to anybody who was being mm-hmm, creative. And the Talking Heads early on sort of based their persona on tightly wound pop, you know, kind of pop rock songs, right? They famously would play a lot of 60s bubblegum covers. They used to play 1-2-3 Red Light, you know, in their early sets.
Turn around to kiss you. 1-2-3 Red Light. You stop me when I know I'm right. Don't stop me. 1-2-3 Red Light. Stop the game. We've got too much to lose.
And obviously David Byrne's frontman persona, you know, it had a little, you know, little Travis Bickle, a little Taxi Driver, a little Son of Sam, you know, he had a very sort of just very fidgety and very anxious and very wired and, you know, seemingly of a split personality almost.
Yes. Kind of like, the character in Psycho,
yeah,
Norman Bates,
exactly,
right? You know?
Yeah, with that same sort of straight-laced sweater, V-neck
that's
sweater
right,
look.
Or like
yeah,
an Oxford shirt, you know, button-down
yeah,
shirt,
exactly,
right? But
you
said kind of skinny and twitchy and
just very,
you know,
wired at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that trio put out a single in February of 77 called Love Goes to a Building on Fire. And between the time that single was recorded and came out on Sire, they were signed on Sire Records, you know, Seymour Stein was snatching up quite a few bands from
right,
the CBGB scene. Then they added kind of their secret weapon. We were talking about how Mike Mills is a secret weapon of REM a couple weeks back, but Jerry Harrison was in the Modern Lovers, so he knew a little something about a wired-up frontman, right?
Right, right.
Playing with Jonathan Richman. Yet he brought this incredible versatility. He played the keyboards, and he could play the guitar, and he had a pop sensibility. And by the time they recorded their first album, 77... he was in the band as the fourth member.
Right. And as you and I have discussed, there aren't that many musicians you can think of who were in like two influential bands,
exactly,
you know, no matter what the era is, like how many guys have had that opportunity. And the other funny thing I was thinking about this today, Patrick, is thinking about the Modern Lovers, the idea that two of their band members went on to be in other bigger bands.
David Robinson, yeah.
Well-respected bands, you know what I mean? David Robinson went on to play in the Cars, the drummer in the Cars.
How crazy
yeah,
is that?
Right.
So that's, you know, that's kind of the backdrop. And then you think about this record, it's a startling debut. It's stark, it's twitchy, like you said. I think that's a great way to describe it. But yet it's informed by a pop sensibility, and it's got lyrics that you wouldn't necessarily expect to match that music. And they were very eye-catching, head-turning. All those things. Psycho Killer, of course, was the
right,
was the big song on that record. It maybe scraped the lower reaches of the, you know, top 100 or something, but it was never really made a big impact. I think originally, critically, you know, they were a little bit more of a success than they were commercially when this first record came out.
That's right. Psycho Killer actually, yes, it hit number 92 on the U.S. Hot 100, which to me, that seems like a huge feat.
unbelievable.
Unto itself, right? For that time and the, what pop music was like, I didn't really, honestly, I didn't really become familiar with that song until Stop Making Sense came out. Mm-hmm. And that was such a huge, I think there was a video even like just that isolated that song. And yeah. It was a big deal because I remember, you know, that was David Byrne in the big suit and he like walks out on stage and just has like a boombox or whatever and starts to play it, right?
Yeah,
and
I want
to
play a tape for you.
It's an amazing song.
Yeah, and each one of their albums, I think each one of the ones we're going to talk about have an iconic song in alternative rock, you know, in alternative music. Each one has sort of a, you know, and that's incredible, you know, kind of a legendary tune. And Psycho Killer being the one for this, I was stunned when I heard him suddenly singing in French. Like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. It's an incredible... you know, illustration of a dual personality, which I think perhaps he was trying to do. But across the rest of the record, there is, I think, breadth of feeling that you didn't find in a lot of records that came out in 77. And maybe they weren't embraced, you know, quite as much right off the jump. But I think in time, that record grew in stature because of how it blended pop music and all their influences and was also intelligent and edgy and the lyrics were very literate. And I think a really good illustration of that is the first song. In this tune, you can hear the bubblegum influence a little bit, right? You can hear that pop sensibility. You can also hear the spareness of the band.
Drums.
Yeah. Well, it didn't make a lot of sense at the time, but later it made a lot of sense with their influences, right?
That's funny you say that. Yeah. Exactly. But how about that? You're right, because we're looking back at these records now. It's really impossible for me to put myself in 1977 because I was too young.
Me too.
At that time. Mm-hmm. You know, I came to the Talking Heads, like I said, like 82, 83, 84, somewhere in that era. But so to think about this, like, again, you know, here's a New York band, you know, playing in the Bowery and all that and whatever images that might conjure up at that time. And, you know, this is track one, you know, this kind of like, you know, this kind of like sort of funky little Caribbean kind of thing. Right. You know, it's captivating, but it's like I said, in the whole of the band's catalog, it makes perfect sense. But at the time, you have to think like where people are like scratching their heads, like, what is this exactly?
Pretty damn odd. Yeah. And the lyricist, who's also quite a remarkable singer, you know, given his enunciation, is equating love to a jet pilot going out of control or a ship captain running aground. Like everything is suddenly off the charts, you know, when love comes to town.
So we'll get into this, I'm sure, his use of imagery in his music. But let me ask you first about the voice. How do you feel about David Byrne as a vocalist?
Well, again, you know, I've grown to love him, mm-hmm. I think, over time. It had to be pretty startling when you first came across him because there weren't a lot of people singing like him, you know, and I think your Anthony Perkins reference is probably right on time here. He just seemed to be controlled by something else, you know, that we weren't necessarily in touch with. So when he sings, I'm not the people you read about in books. You can kind of relate to that, right? But also he sang with a passion and an urgency that really made you pay attention. I mean, think of a song like Don't Worry About the Government.
I see the states across this big nation. I see the laws made in Washington, D.C. I think of the ones I consider my favorites. I think of the people that are working for me. Some civil servants are just like my loved ones. They work so hard and they try to be strong. I'm a lucky guy to live in my building. They all need buildings to help them along. It's over there, it's over there. My building has every convenience. It's gonna make life easy for me. It's gonna be easy to get things.
Man, it really catches you. And you could tell he cared a lot.
Is this a time to take a little break?
I think it's
and
a good time.
And then we'll come back and talk more.
Yeah, you got one to play too.
I absolutely do, and I'm very excited about this. So, Patrick, as we sit here tonight,
yeah,
I'm refreshing my screen here on my computer, and Rock in the Suburbs is doing quite well on the iTunes music podcast chart.
That's fantastic.
We're doing well.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that chart. A lot more goes into that chart than just how many times people listen to episodes.
Yeah, that's right.
Another key factor, or probably in some ways even bigger factors, are number of people who are like new subscribers to the show mm-hmm. and number of people who rate and review the show.
That's right. And along with the checks that we send to Apple. Kidding, of course, folks.
Of course, because we don't have any money.
No, we don't have a dime between us. And
you had to make this furniture.
Exactly. That's how bad it is. But no, you couldn't have said it better, Jim. That's really one of the main things that shows engagement, you know. And when we talk about like ratings and top 10 and everything, engagement really is the most important thing for us. And we see a lot of great engagement on a fan mail post, but we really appreciate it if you like the, you know, the show, just to take that 1 minute. You can do it right there on your phone while you're listening.
Yep.
If you're running along or working at home, just take that minute and hit the 5 stars button.
Do that.
And it makes a big, big difference for us in the long run.
So rate, review, subscribe.
Those are the three things we need you to do.
RRS.
That's it. RRS.
All right. Now, let's get back to Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Okay, Patrick, I want to turn this up a notch.
Last song on the record, right?
I know, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Comes right after Psycho Killer, too.
What about that one for you?
So here's the deal with this song.
Okay.
This song has a personal story for
Great.
Me. So I first became familiar with the Talking Heads ding through MTV.
Yeah.
You know, once in a lifetime,
yeah.
That video. Burning down the house. Yep. With that video, yeah, with the highway.
Yes.
Those are probably the big two. There may have been some others in there as well. And then Stop Making Sense.
Of course, I
had Stop Making Sense album, and that was an album that was in regular rotation for me. I played that like crazy. I just love that. I don't know about you, but I'm actually rarely impressed with live albums, but that's one that is just, it's fantastic because they sort of reinterpret the songs.
Yeah,
and things.
Absolutely.
It's really just wonderful. And the movie is great. I mean, everything about that is great. Love it. So that was sort of my, you know, sort of Talking Heads world in high school. And then when I went to college freshman year, I can remember this, you know, they put you in a dorm and you're surrounded by all these kids you've never met before.
Yeah.
And there's a kid down the hall. I believe his name was Bill. Let's just call him Bill. It's been a long time, but I think his name was Bill. Bill was a guy who would, you know, leave the dorm room door open and play his Rickenbacker.
Got it.
And he would he had like a rat tail kind of thing going on in the back. And he also liked to play hacky sack.
Oh, nice.
But you got to remember, this was 1985 I'm talking about here. So he had a big collection of, at the time it was cassettes, but he had a big collection of like, you know, sort of like punk and new wave and alternative stuff and things that I had not really heard before.
Yeah.
And so when we got to talking about Talking Heads, he was like, he introduced me to Talking Heads 77.
Yeah.
And he said, the song I think you're really going to like is Pulled Up.
Really? Interesting.
And so, because it's probably their most poppy
song.
Right,
at
least for that era, especially.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it's fantastic. It's a wonderful song. And the thing I love about this song, too, is not just, you know, that it's this great little pop song and it's sort of, you know, it's hopeful. It's actually a song that's about, you know, it's a positive kind of song for the Talking Heads, which is a little bit different, right? But also, like, as it goes and it goes, his singing just gets crazier and crazier. It's really fun. It's a fun song to listen to.
And, you know, it is. It's a great pick. And I was thinking about playing it myself and begins to show a little bit of where they were going to go and that they could play this, you know, kind of funk, you know, kind of groovy kind of style. If you listen to Jerry Harrison's little guitar fills right behind the lyrics there, the way they come in with just that little riff is really fantastic. And there's a lot of great songs in this record. New Feeling comes to mind. No Compassion is a really interesting song. Last week, there's a lot of really good stuff. The book I read. What I find it really intriguing and also I think what makes this record enduring is that the Talking Heads have been going for a while. At least, you know, David Byrne had been writing songs for up to 3 years at this point, right? And I think when you make your debut album, especially for a major label, you kind of pull in everything you have and you put it on the table and you lay it down. And so you hear some different styles and some variations, but Pulled Up is really kind of, you know, a summation of all the different kind of things you get on this record with singing and lyrics and sort of agitation, you know, and all the really fun stuff.
Pulled Up, I think, actually sort of foreshadows stuff that they did kind of in the period after we're even going to talk about this week. You know, when you get into like the Little Creatures and the Wild Wild Life from True Stories, you know, things like that, really much more like straight on pop songs. But you can see, you know, that they could do that right from the start.
Yeah.
It's just that they said, yeah, that doesn't really interest us that much.
Right.
Maybe we'll come back to that someday later. Right.
We've got other things to think about.
Right. Exactly.
And and I think that's well said. Very clear from the debut album, this is a band that was going places.
Very good. Okay. So speaking of those places, tomorrow we'll talk about the next album, right?
Yes.
More songs. All right. So we'll do that and then continue to talk about Talking Heads throughout the week. All right. So, Patrick, the way people can listen to this show is through the Apple Podcasts or the Audio Boom or any of the podcast platforms. Maybe not any. I may be overstating it, but you get the idea.
Most of the podcast
platforms. It's out there, people.
Yeah.
And it cannot be ignored.
No.
You can also tell us about what you think about the Talking Heads or, you know, what are your favorite albums of theirs? And you can do that by emailing us, rock@suburbspod.com.
Do that.
Or visiting us on the social medias of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @suburbspod.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really comments on the Instagram part.
Not really.
They just like the photos that we put
up. Just like the photos. Occasionally people say something, but you can
do
that.
But you can, if you want.
Mm-hmm. There's no character limit.
I know the kids love the Instagram.
They
so
do.
So when we reach out to the kids, we do the show for the kids, they'll, that's the way they'll
We're not going to Snapchat, yeah. So Instagram is as close as we get, kids.
That's right. Also, we have a website, which is suburbspod.com.
Yeah, where
you
a lot
can
of good stuff.
Find, you can listen to the show there or find little notes about the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, oh, you can call the Suburban Party Line.
Please do.
Which is really just a voicemail.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the Suburban Party Line.
But you leave the voicemail. We hear your voice. We put you on an upcoming show. So
yes, that means a lot to us.
Tell us, this is, you know, the name of this band is Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Talking is part of the name. You should be talking as well, right?
Yes.
Did I miss anything?
No, I think you got it all.
Right? Okay.
You cleaned it all up.
All right. So this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
It's not.
Sunday came around and I really had to work my ass off to get this thing finished.